So in the group, some amazing things happened. One time, this girl was the target, and she gave us a name. The target was a name. So we described a house surrounded by a lot of foliage, very, not tropical, very exotic house, beautiful, and a large kitchen lined with empty jars of bako bits, okay? We kept getting a name, certain name, I won't repeat it because it's of privacy concerns, and describing all these things, okay? And then we're describing the man being viciously beaten and mugged. So we finished the session, the girl placed an audio recording back that we made live, and we told her, if it's accurate, stop it and tell us what it is. If it isn't accurate, let it go. And this is described in my article, a little bit in my book. So our description of his name was almost perfect. It was a very odd name, but it was very, very almost perfectly accurate. The house, perfectly accurate. The kitchen lined with empty jars of bako bits, yep, that's exactly what it was. But the kicker was this. Several days later, the girl called me, and she was freaking out. What's the matter? She said, when I was doing the session, my friend, who lived up in the Bay Area near San Francisco, was being viciously and brutally mugged and beaten at that time. But the girl didn't know it when she was in our group, nor did we. So what are we accessing? What's the source of the information? And this is where this is the whole problem. Another time, we got sick of doing the real-time ESP stuff. Been there, done that. Boring, boring, boring. We did it. We visitors from the government early on in the early 70s, Defense Intelligence Agency, NSA, CIA, DARPA, Office of Naval Intelligence. It's written up in my book and on my website. Okay, so let's do something different, precognitive remote viewing. So the last session of this Wednesday night, it's 1 week forward in time. Describe the first target of the new session of a week from now. So we describe a tall woman. Blue, dirty blonde hair, beautiful blue eyes, strikingly gorgeous, sculpted features, model-like, wearing a beige pantsuit, very professional. We named the, described the one chair in the conference room she sat in. There were 24 chairs. Okay, we described a big three-story home in the Hollywood Hills, a baby grand piano, and then we start talking about a tall man, very tall, dressed all in black, black hat, black shirt, black slacks, black boots, black gloves, big broad belt, black mask, black hat, a black cape, and an imposing sword. We thought, are we losing our minds? Huh. So the next week, new people come in. They'd never been there before, brought in through third party, so no one knew what we did the prior week. Each new person was given a sealed envelope with a number in it on a piece of paper. We sat down, we rolled dice, asked, okay, open your packets. Whosever number fits the number you see on the dice, you're chosen. This one girl, oh, it's me. So we forgot what we had said the week earlier. Was, you know, who cares? She's playing the tape back. Her description is perfect, even to the clothes she's wearing. Huh? Then she's sitting of her own accord in the one chair we named the week earlier. Could have been coincidence. The three-story house, the baby grand piano, that's where she grew up. Could have been coincidence. Then comes the tall man dressed in all black with a sword. Her father was Guy Williams, who played Zorro for Disney. And she went, what? She said, well, wait a minute, do you know who I am? We go, well, no, I'm Tony Williams. They go, who's Tony Williams? My father is Guy Williams. He went, what? She says, wait, when did you make the tape? A week ago. A week ago? I didn't know he was coming here until 2 hours ago. I don't get it. We don't either. That's why it's called paranormal phenomena. So it really unnerved some of our people because it was a little too precise to be considered guessing. And it really freaked the girl out. I could understand it. I mean, it was amazing. It just the chance of getting that information was astronomical. The only thing we didn't say was Zorro. If we said Zorro, it would have been my God. So, okay. So we tried again months later, another precognitive session. All we could see was fire, 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 fire. We quit. We couldn't take it anymore. I'm up in the lab the next day, to Thursday. Fire engines coming to the neuropsychiatric institute where we worked. And I go downstairs. Our conference room caught on fire. One of the outlets behind one of the drapes sparked and started a fire. No wonder why we saw the fire the previous day. That was imminent. And no, we didn't start the fire, so let's make that clear. It wasn't a self-fulfilling prophecy. So what is going on here? How could you see things that are displaced by a week unless the information is already there? Either it's information, it's there, or it's not. There's no middle ground here. And what does it mean? So that means the future's already there. It exists. We don't know that. We can't tell you that. The odds, if I had to make a guess, I'd say the future is as immutable as the past is, that we may have no more ability to change the future than we have of changing the past. We know we can't change the past, although there are people who think they can, which is also discussed on my website, a little bit in my book. But what would it do to us if we realized that everything is everywhere, that we can tap into any informational source if we can hone the method of the process? But it's even worse. Think of this. What if we discovered that the human race has an inconceivable past and an unimaginable future? What if it was proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the human race was not made by God? That intelligent design is essentially correct, except for one caveat. God didn't make us, someone else did. And what if we discovered we were made by another race of beings within our star system as an experiment? This is on my website, and it's in my book. And if this is true, and I believe it is, from the evidence I've seen, from quality sources, reliable sources, trustworthy sources, then we truly do have an inconceivable past, an unimaginable future. If we think we've got crazy people now running into holy wars, screaming the name of their God, because they don't like other people who don't think like they do, we ain't seen nothing yet. This could trigger the Third World War. And I've talked about this for quite a while. A lot of people get upset when I talk about it. I look, don't kill the messenger if you don't like what I'm saying. Don't believe me. I don't care. I'll tell you one thing. If I was the government, if I was the faction controlling this information, from the reaction I've seen from people in the last 35 or 40 years to this stuff, I would not release this data. It would be the most destabilizing thing ever given to the human race. And remember, the government in America, let's just focus on the U.S. for a second. The government in this country cares about one thing and one thing only. Come April 15th, you write that damn check to them. That's all they care about. And if the message tranquility fails because of chaos and socioeconomic infrastructure collapse because of chaos, we don't write our checks. Game's over. That's all they care about. And I, believe it or not, I think they're doing the right thing by not disclosing this to the public. No one would benefit except the few of us out there that want the truth. So what is that? What would that? We would be totally disenfranchised as a race of beings. We may be the aliens to the Earth, which is even stranger.
Well, here's the problem I have with that. I mean, the same argument could be made for don't tell people that 9/11 was an inside job, or don't tell people that corporations own the government and enslave everybody. Don't tell people the Federal Reserve is so on and so forth. The problem is, all these truths are inherently traumatic, and I believe, and I've said this many times before, bears repeating again, that if a piece of information is traumatic to receive, then it's probably a good idea to receive it sooner rather than later.
I agree. I totally agree with every perfect description. That I agree. But see, the government, only our government, let's say the U.S. government, Western governments, they care about the bottom line. The bottom line is, you know, we don't trust anybody. You know, there's a new series on called Hangar One on the History Channel, I think, History 2. And they talked, the first episode dealt with the government, the White House, and who's known what in terms of ufology. And there's good evidence that some presidents knew a lot, that Eisenhower might have met aliens, and maybe his predecessor did, the one who took over it when FDR died, Truman. I'm telling you, when I was teaching parapsychology for 12 years in adult school all over the Southern California here, one night was dedicated to ufology, 3 hours of ufology. It showed clips of things and photos, talked about this and much more, a lot of information. And every time I taught the class, every year for 22 years, some people would go to the principal and complain real loudly, I'm a heretic, it's blasphemy, how dare he do that, blah, blah, blah. And the principal would say, you don't like it, here's your money back, leave. And they did. That's just a little thing. There, see, as long as the stuff remains as, oh, did you see that great movie, or watch that video, or see that documentary, did you read that cool book? Oh, no one cares. If it affects them personally, it makes you question who you are, what you are, where you come from, where you're going, it disenfranchises the human spirit. So we're guinea pigs? Maybe. But see, I agree with you, what you just said. I agree perfectly with it. But the government, the faction of the government that controls this, they don't agree with you. And it behooves them to do what you're saying. The longer this goes on, the worse it's going to get for everybody. But, you know,
it will be war. In fact, right. It already is. As many people have talked about, we're already engaged in an information war with the factions that control most of the information research and basically hold the purse strings of the world at this point.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's kind of like I've used the analogy of what's it called? The tortoise and the hare. We're the hare. We've been sleeping under the tree for goodness knows how long. And suddenly we've awakened and realized that, oh my God, the freaking tortoise is going to win if we don't do something really, really fast.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. It's the whole thing's very strange. But see, for example, I've learned a long time ago, I don't believe anything the government says. You know, they can't keep track of what lies they say to what people. You know, with the Roswell thing. Oh, it was a weather balloon. Oh, no, it's Project Mogul. Yeah. Oh, what about the crash? What about the bodies? Oh, they were crash test dummies. But those for a decade later, no one knows. No one knows what decade it is. They confuse one decade and another. Right. So it's like they lied and they lie about the lie and they lie about the lie and the lie. That's how you describe a psychopath.
Oh, yeah.
You know what's interesting in history? Before the first atom bomb was detonated, the head of naval munitions, I forgot his name, was an admiral. He swore to the guy, he said, I guarantee you this will be no more than a blockbuster. It will not produce. And he said, I will resign if it works. He told his men there in Nevada to build an iron casing around it to show how good of a dud it was. They didn't do it. It was too hot. It detonated. And it only actually, it didn't, the fission was only partial for all the bombs initially detonated. It didn't work that well, but it worked well enough to demonstrate the principle. He resigned the next day. In 1959, the head of Caltech, a physicist quite renowned, made a proclamation, we will never land on the moon because it's impossible. And he was right. the guy who created television, a man by the name of Philo T. Farnsworth, he's plowing the field on a farm, and he suddenly had an epiphany. Oh, my God. He figured out a way to send pictures through the air, not just voice, but pictures. He developed it. He brought it to David Sarnoff at RCA. David Sarnoff stole it, and there's television. Sarnoff never got a penny. His wife collected a little money out of it. Big deal. One of the most pivotal and important inventions in the history of the human race, and the guy who created it was robbed. It goes, I know I can't go into details about this, but at the end of World War II, you know, when Germany was put under, they were experimenting with some extraordinary things. This is also on my website in my book. And they were trying to develop wonder weapons, and they're developing new forms of propulsion that weren't rocket-based, but it didn't really go anywhere, some UFO-type things, and new types of energy. It was probably a form of zero point discussed on my website and in my book. And when we captured, brought that stuff back here, it went to Los Alamos and Sandia. One of my friends knows a lot of the head engineers from those places. He's a colleague of mine for decades. And we asked him, this stuff exists? Yes. You have it? Yes. Does it exist? Yes. Will it ever be brought to the public and used? No. So here's the whole thing. Tomorrow, let's say there's a breakthrough. We found a way to tap into zero-point energy. It's cold energy. It can power the Earth. Our cities, our cars, our planes, our boats, everything with cold energy, no more oil, no more coal, no more nuclear, no more hydroelectric, gone. We'd all like it, but there's trillions of dollars wrapped up in petrochemicals, in coal and oil. No one's going to throw that away because people want something else. And even if that was developed to displace it, You've got it. Someone has to develop it. There costs money. Build it. Manufacture it. Money. Distribute it. Money. Sell it. Money. So money, 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 money. So instead of filling your tank, you'll buy a car that'll cost $250,000. Well, now it costs $30,000. And you're going to pay the difference, but it'll be over a longer period of time. Nothing is going to be free. Nothing is going to be free. And, you know, it's, you know, the altruism has gone out the window. Basically, completely. You know, in the original Day of the Earth Stood Still in 1951, they did a remake of it, and it was so bad, it was painful to watch. It was, the effects were good, but it's like, so, there's a really good amount of evidence collected that there has been formal contact between some extraterrestrials and a faction of our government or the military, and it will very likely never be disclosed to the public, because the can of worms is massive. And the evidence suggests that we, meaning a faction of our government, not the government directly, a faction, has given, like a rogue faction, has perhaps they said, okay, we'll give you access to our people. You can abduct them and do this and this and this, but we want something in return, so they give us toys to play with. And their toys. So, you know, the government, like I said, the government can't be trusted. They never could be. If people knew that wars are many, you know, I don't know how many people realize this, but you know how many major corporations were helping to support the Nazis and Hitler? Ford, IG Farben, when they made Bayer aspirin, they made Zyklon B. There are many other companies that America, and the father of John F. K. and Robert Kennedy, and Ted, was funding Hitler and Nazi Germany until D-Day, when he had to stop, because then it wouldn't have been accepted. A lot of money was why, and I don't know if people realize that Winston Churchill, from what I've read, I don't know if this is correct, but I'll state it, and not as fact, that he owned part of a munitions factory, and they were selling munitions to Germany before the war. So it sounds like we fight wars for money. We've always fought wars for money. And nothing's changed, except we have better weapons. So what do you do?
Well, isn't it interesting if you can fight wars for money? I think the Reserve Banks and whatnot figured out a way that they can create money out of nothing so that they can now actually create wars right. For no reason as well.
Exactly, right. I mean, before we went into the first Gulf War, it was really easy way to stop everything, and they didn't do it. Another thing, you know, after Fukushima, it was horrible. The earthquake, the tsunami, the nuclear stuff, it was terrible. There was a way to stop the radiation from continuing to spill, and I thought of it. I talked to friends in the government I know of, and they were aware of it, and they decided not to do it because it would make them look bad. I go, it'll kill the entire planet if you don't. Well, you know, I mean, but we don't want to look bad. I go, you'll be dead if you don't do this. But we don't want to look bad. So you'd rather be dead. They go, yeah. I go, okay, I'm not going to have this discussion. It's fruitless. So, you know, it's
and this is why, ladies and gentlemen, don't trust people in government. I mean, we would rather die than do the right thing. Literally.
Now, you know that on the site of where the reactors were built, where the damage occurred, there's ancient inscriptions from cultures dating back long, long ago warning people, do not build or live here because it's a dangerous site. They didn't do anything about earthquake faults or subduction zones or tsunamis, but they knew it was a dangerous area. And what they build those plants on that site. Hello? They knew the faults were there. And then, well, what's the probability of a 9.1 quake and a tsunami? 1 in a trillion, but even one is bad. So, you know, there have been rumors that we're going to move all of Japan to parts of China. They built up big cities long ago that were never occupied, but no one. It's bad. The water, the air, the fishing industry is dead around it, and all this stuff's coming out, and the news are not reporting on it here. Because they don't want to create panic. The estimates early on, this is just a month ago actually, that they say the Fukushima is equivalent to 4,000 Chernobyls. And the heat, they've won a method of freezing the area, but it's so hot they can't do it. It's the amount of radiation, not heat, but just radiation tears everything apart. So the water's contaminated, now some of it's showing up in Northern California and Oregon and Washington. And it'll affect the water table, it'll affect the air. The only way they could have stopped it early on, when I ask you that, does anything come to mind how they could have stopped the process early on, right after the damage? Anything come to mind?
Nothing.
There's one thing: they could have vaporized all those MOX rods on top of the reactors and within them. Would have been a thermonuclear detonation right on the site. The heat would have vaporized everything. I mean, with nothing left. It wouldn't have been air burst. It would have been a ground burst where the center would be right with, and would vaporize all that material. Would have to occur. No, they knew it would work. They didn't want to do it. It looks bad. We nuked part of a country. Would you rather lose the entire country in the world? Yeah, but we don't want to look bad. Oh, okay. Okay, fine. Decades ago, I went to the AQMD out here, Air Quality Management District. And I said, you know, there's a way to get rid of the smog. We break the inversion layer. And they go, how do you do that? And I said, well, you drill tunnels in the mountains. You know, I show where the high pressure builds up, and that prevents the inversion layer and prevents the smog from being kept down by the heat. And they say, we know that. Why don't you do it? Well, that won't earn us any money, but it'll keep the air clean. Yeah, we want to make crap for cars that doesn't work. So, you know, but our job is to make money, not to make the air clean. I'm going, oh, God. A couple of years ago, I met some guys from Caltech. They developed a new lithium-ion polymer battery. And they tested it in trucks, buses, in cars, and it worked. It could be recharged in a matter of minutes. Its range was several hundred miles, equivalent to a modern gasoline engine. They took it to the automotive companies, and they were all turned down. They all turned them down. Why? We don't want this. Why? And they said, if you try to commercialize, you're going to end up in the same box it's in. End of story. They walked away. A little scary. You know, there was a name, Bill Lear. He developed the Lear Jets decades ago. And he developed a turbine engine for automotive applications, tested it in cars and buses and trucks. Few moving parts, much more efficient. He solved the exhaust heat problems. Nobody wanted it. In 1966, Andy Granatelli ran a turbine car. Who drove it? Pernelli Jones. All-wheel drive turbine car in Indy. It walked away from the entire field. On the very last lap, it was leading by a considerable margin, a ball bearing, and the transmission went out, and it quit. Okay. They were so intimidated, the other car manufacturers that make the engines and chassis, they made them restrict the air intakes and exhaust on the next ones, the 67. Again, they were still winning, and they lost ball bearing went out again in the transmission. They were then banned, Indianapolis forever banned turbines in all-wheel drive. We don't want white too big of a change. Had that not occurred, had they accepted it, we'd all be driving turbines now. Much more reliable, much more robust, and they burn anything combustible. Anything. But that didn't happen. So, we have a crazy world. A very, very crazy world.
Have you noticed how people don't actually take that conclusion to that thought to its logical conclusion? Oh, we've got a crazy world, but there's people that run the world. Well, then those people must be fucking crazy!
Yeah, it's like we said earlier, people, they're too busy living. They got to make a living. You got to pay your mortgage, your rent. You got to buy food. You got to have transportation. You got to this. You got to pay your health insurance, blah, blah, and this. And they're so busy living, they don't have time to think about helping change the world. I don't know. In my book, I talk about one of the reasons that I think abductions may be occurring, UFO abductions. One of the reasons is that they know something about our future we don't. Like, maybe we don't make it here. Maybe we're going to be removed and they're going to replace us with another form of life. Or maybe they're using, hybridized versions of us, mixing with God knows what DNA, to populate another planet in their star system. We don't know. And that brings me to the thought, in my book, on my website, I talk about this. In a UCLA alumni engineering lecture that Ben Rich gave, he was one of the heads of Lockheed Martin Skunk Works. developed a lot of some of the most advanced technology on Earth, the SR-71, the U-2, a whole bunch of things. He said, we have the ability to take E.T. home. We have things flying at groom length that would make George Lucas drool. And he says, we know how to go through interstellar space in real time. It's way different than we thought. And so afterwards, I went up to him, and Dr. Richard goes, Ben, really nice guy, very funny, very smart, very intelligent, old UCLA graduate. I said, the technology you're speaking of, did you develop it or did you acquire it, reverse engineer it? He goes, what do you think? I said, I think the latter. He goes, you might be right. I said, will it ever see the light of day? He goes, how old are you? I was in my 40s, and he goes, no, you're not going to see it. No. Your great-great-great-grandkids might, but don't hold your breath. The technology is now called an alien reproduction vehicle. It doesn't use rockets or jets or propellers. It uses what's called a magnetoplasma propulsion, which is also used by the TR-3B, which neutralizes the mass and the inertia of an object, which make it extremely maneuverable and allow to behave in a way that a normal aircraft can't. This is the beginning of warp drive. To manipulate, you take a highly compressed mercury plasma that's got particulates of niobium embedded within it. You rotate it at very high speed or counter-rotate it, and you create what's called frame-dragging effect. But you create a torsion field which produces frame-dragging effects. You've basically got a warp drive on your hands. This is discussed in my book and on my website. And Ben Rich died not long after that talk. He's an old man, but really, really sharp man. And I don't think we'll ever live to see this stuff come to pass. In my website, there was a picture taken on one of the shuttle flights years ago, looking down, and you see one of the Aurora-class vehicles, which has been denied to exist, banking, and it's going down back to Earth. The Aurora is a Delta, tapered V. It's got a combined cycle liquid methane-powered scramjet engine and a rocket. And they can go into low Earth orbit and put out microsatellites. And they are single stage to orbit, meaning they take off like a regular airliner, like a jet, and they go up into orbit and they land under power. And on my website, there's a blog called The Last Plane, no, Come Fly With Me, The Last Plane Standing. You'll see some drawings of it, depictions of it. And it flies up to Mach 15 in the upper atmosphere. Now, that's moving. The SR-71 that was mothballed, they claim its top speed was 2193. No, not even close. The Mach was actually a little over Mach 6, which is over 5,000 miles per hour. So, but they lied about it because they didn't want people to know what we have. Who cares? No. So, we live in a crazy world, very crazy world. And, if I was born today, I'd probably be in a really weird place because I know if the standards, when I was in school and in high school and college and graduate school, the standards were pretty rigid to get all your work. Now it's kind of a joke from what I've seen. A lot of the people coming out of school can barely read or write. It's very depressing. And all used to be all these graduates in engineering and physics and medicine and other areas of science. And now they all want to work in the entertainment industry. A dead-end situation,
Well, see, ironically, I've seen a lot more advanced technology rolled out on Hollywood screens than I have seen released by scientists in the last goodness knows how many years. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they're... it's interesting. I wrote a script years ago called Stealth. It's not the version that was made years ago. And it was based on the Aurora vehicle. And, it starts off where, a KC-135Q tanker is refueling a vehicle and they've never seen it before. And it's this big black Delta thing and it's got no markings on it. It's got, anti-collision lights and navigation lights and all that. But what is it? And they're told, don't, just respond to things, lower the boom, and they see it. And they can barely fly subsonic, only except when they're landing. And they say, what the hell is that? And people have seen it in flight, and they said, because of the engine, pulsed wave detonation, scramjet, the air feels like it's being torn apart. So instead of a continuous roar, you're bum, 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 bum. Similar to the V-1 in World War II, the old pulse jets. This is far more advanced technology. You got a lot more propulsion out of it than you would normally. And boy, would I love to fly one of those. Oh, God. You low Earth, go up low Earth orbit, do your thing, and then come down and land.
Are you much of a pilot, are you?
Yeah, well, I couldn't fly for the military or the airlines because I'm too short and my vision couldn't be corrected well enough. So I got a private license. I got a multi-engine riding license. I got a multi-engine private license. I was going to go. It's too expensive and the technology didn't evolve. I thought when I was young, by this time we'd have at least supersonic transports, maybe hypersonic commercial transports, or we'd have real starships. Boy, was I wrong about that. But, you know, nothing wrong with thinking. You know, it's just like there's just no money in it.
Well, you know what? For all we know, they've probably got copious quantities of real starships that just like everything else, they just don't tell us about.
I mean, it's not used commercially. You know, we saw what happened with the flight. There was a France and British thing. What was that plane? The Delta Wing thing was supersonic.
Concorde.
Beautiful. I saw it when it came in first to land at LAX in the 70s. Gorgeous. Beautiful machine. I mean, but it wasn't efficient. It burned fuel like a pig. It was too expensive to operate in. You know, that when the thing exploded years ago, you know, that was horrible, terrible. And, you know, machines are machines. When I was young, I had no idea that flying in the military, not even in combat, I'm just like flying, you practice, you're training, whether you're in your cargo transport or you're flying fighter jets, your chance of dying is 1 in 5. That's a joke. In commercial aviation, when you fly around the world in your plane, you know, airliners, your chance of dying is 1 in 118,000, which is fine. 1 in 5, I'd never go up in a military aircraft, ever. But had I been taller with better vision, I would have gone to the Air Force and go to the Air Force Academy, get a Doctor of Science degree there, and become a test pilot or an astronaut. But it didn't work out. Too small, my vision wasn't good enough.
Oh, well. Instead, you get to discover the mysteries of the universe and psychic abilities and stuff like that.
Yeah, on my table, on my dining room table, instead of having a centerpiece, I have a 3-foot model of the Starship Enterprise from the first several movies. It's got over 100 LEDs. It lights up the room. It looks like it's floating in space. Very expensive. I got it about 3 years ago. It cost only about $3,500. Now it costs close to $6,000. You don't build it. You buy it and it's shipped to you. But it's gorgeous. I mean, it looks exactly like the ones did in the first several movies in 79 and 81 and 83 or 4, whatever it was. But it's really great. And when I was started working with Dr. Moss at UCLA back in 69, they gave me all these tests to evaluate me and this and, you know, make sure I wasn't out of my mind. That's understandable. So a psychiatrist was interviewing me, and he said, if you could do anything in the world, what would you want to do? And remember, this is 1969, so bear in mind the time frame. I said, I'd like to be the captain of the Enterprise. He goes, what? Oh, you want to be a naval commander? No, not that Enterprise. Up there, he goes, Star Trek. He goes, what do you mean? Well, if we're building starships to fly around the universe faster than light, which I think we could do eventually, we've solved all of our problems here, and we're going out into space to better ourselves. And he went, I told Dr. Moss, he's normal, he's just living a couple of hundred years too early. So, you know, I would have probably, my job there would have been more as the chief engineer, Scotty or Spock. It wouldn't have been the captain, if you got it, it's still. Would have been Spock or Scotty, probably Spock. But, you know, I saw this thing available a couple of years ago, that ship, and I bought it, and my friends couldn't believe I spent that kind of money. I said, but it's me, you know? So, my parents didn't live to see it. They would have been interested in seeing it. They would have said, you wasted that kind of money? You only live once. So, but...
Allegedly, you know, we only live once.
I mean, only the ones that we're aware of, consciously. I've had a
few. Do you reckon there is those other experiences? Like I've seen stories of people in India and what have you who will like kind of be born, and by the time they're a child, they're able to speak. They right. start asking their parents if they can go home, and they remember right. a completely different place that's home.
Yeah, there have been Dr. Ian Stevenson did a lot of work in suggestive cases of reincarnation, mostly in India. And I believe that, yeah, I think it's real, except that I think we're misinterpreting the event. I believe that our time and space are not what we think it is. They're what we've been conditioned to think. So some part of our mind is accessing information that came before. If there's reincarnation, then it's got to be pre-incarnation. So if we're living now and remember that we lived 200 years ago, why can't we remember where we're going to be in 300 years in the future? I don't care about the past. We've been there. I want to know where we're going and make it better. So it's got to be both directions, not just one. But in some ways, I feel like I've been dropped here by accident and I'm stuck in the past. I've developed a number of medical devices that have been patented with one of my colleagues. And it's like trying to sell a car to a caveman. Another one of my blogs called Energy Medicine, Selling a Car to a Caveman, talks about some of these things. And yeah, we got patents on them, they work, we've been tested, but the money required to take them to the FDA is huge. I mean, many tens of millions of dollars, but the potential reward on them is billions. We have no competitors. The devices we developed, there's no equivalent devices like them on Earth right now anywhere that are being sold in medicine. So we don't have a lot of problems. The problem is getting someone to put up the money to get us through the FDA because we don't have that kind of money. And even then, they may not approve it because big pharmaceutical companies will say, oh, no, we don't want preventative medicine. No, we'll let people get sick, treat their symptoms, but don't cure them. Just keep them the same way forever. So when I was in graduate school running around UCLA, I remember I was going to different departments talking about the work of Dr. Robert O. Becker, who did mammalian limb regeneration and also was able to heal wounds real quickly and all sorts of incredible things, electromedicine. And all the departments go, we could care less. Who gives a damn? I go, is anyone, you know anyone who's lost a hand or an arm or a leg in an accident or a war? You can regenerate it. They didn't care. You break a bone instead of being in the cast for 6 to 9 weeks, imagine being a cast for 10 days, you get an induction field going, and the bone heals quicker, and it's better. Pop it off, and that's it. No one cares. Yeah, okay. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Well, it's only unbelievable because you're not a psychopathic, crazy person who only cares about money and doesn't worry right. about the human suffering that you cause on the right. in the process of making that money.
Right.
If you were a psychopath who really loved making money at the hands of human suffering, everything would make total sense to you that's going on yeah. in the world right now, bar none, yeah. would it?
Right, exactly. And yeah, it literally feels like someone dropped me 300 years in the past. What am I doing here? It's like, this is insanity. What do you mean? It's like, huh? One of the devices we developed is a device only for women. A woman grabs it with her hand, inserts finger into the electrode slot. It measures her fertility cycle. So it can tell her, one, if she's pregnant or not, just by grabbing it. Two, it'll tell her if she's fertile, meaning she is ovulating, or if she's not ovulating. She can use it as a pregnancy detector. She can use it for contraception or for fertility enhancement. And since most men run these big medical companies, they don't care about a product for women because they're not women. They don't care. Who cares? Not my problem. No. And our parent device is similar to this, but it hooks up to different parts on the body, and it scans the internal organs, not imaging. And it tells you, like, the heart, the lungs, the bladder, stomach, large bowel intestines, kidneys, spleen, liver, their current condition, their impending condition, and what the problem is and how severe the problem is. And it takes a matter of minutes just to test the electrode to different parts of the body. Non-invasively, 100% reliable. People say, yeah, but what good is it? What good is it? It'll save billions of dollars and say, yeah, but I mean, we'll have imaging. Yeah, but that fries you. Yeah, it's okay. No one cares. The imaging budget is $700 billion a year around the world. They're not about to give that up or let anything displace it. You know, again, that's why the part of the article is entitled Trying to Sell a Car to a Caveman, because that's what it's like. You know, I mean, when I learned when I went to graduate school, no one wants anything unique or original. They want you to just regurgitate what's already been there. Nothing new, nothing different. No, do the same thing everyone else has done. So in order to go to graduate school, I had to take two tests. One was called the graduate records examination. That was easy. It's your memory. You spit back what you learned. It's no big deal. Okay, came out really well. Another test is called the Miller's Analogy Test, MAT. And, okay, word one is to word two, as word three is to word four. For word four, you have six choices. So I took the test, and I come to pick up my score like 2 weeks later. The lady says to me at the desk, "Did you grow up here?" I go, "Where, in L.A.?" She goes, "No, on the earth." I went, "What?" She goes, "What do you mean?" She says, "Well, you scored on the lowest percentile ranking." She goes, "That is that good?" "Well, no, that means you don't think like everyone else does." I go, "Is that bad?" "Oh, yeah, we want everyone to think the same." I said, "Isn't that called death? Stagnation?"
I thought it was called mind control or tyranny or frickin' insanity.
No, it's called conditioning. Everyone just wear blinders, do what you're told, and don't think. Don't think out of the box. Think only, you know, just don't think about yesterday. Don't think about tomorrow. Just think about do your job, go home, and don't bother us.
Yep. You know? Still sounds like mind control, bro.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I didn't get normal jobs when I finished graduate school, I applied, was that the work I had done, even up to that point of time, was a little different as was my dissertation. And they don't like people that do things different. They want you to do the same thing over and over again. I didn't want to do it. So what do you do? What do you do?
Well, it sucks living life that's predictable, yeah. Don't you think? You know, I want excitement. I want discovery. I want something that's new and amazing and that blows my mind on a consistent daily frickin' basis. I don't want normality. I don't want comfort. I want something real.
And you know what's odd is that the new technology over the last 25 or 30 years, everything is an extrapolation of what's out there. There's no dramatic jump forward in anything. All the new stuff is about media contact, media, you know, social contact. We enough already. Do something about improving the human condition: health, food, energy, transportation. No. Make it for the internet. Make it for phones, glasses. You can look at people. Well, who cares? No, do something relevant. No. We don't want to. So it's hard. It's like, I feel like I'm living, like I said, I feel like I'm in the dark age.
It's like being the only rational mind in an insane world kind of thing. Now, does that make you feel lonely? Sometimes, maybe?
Not lonely, somewhat detached. The world seems very dystopian to me, where it's like a totally insane reality, and I'm trying to bring sanity to it, and no one cares. You know, it's
well,
like,
do you ever get despondent everybody else is, or disillusioned, I think is one of those words, I think disillusion's good because it means you're no longer operating under a frickin' illusion.
What I do is I do a lot of writing, which is all the blogs on my website and other stuff, and I do consulting for shows and all that. And, you know, most people, they live together. They grow up. They go to school. They get a job. They get married. They have kids. They get old and die. That's it. You're born. You're dead. Very few people have any desire or intent to do anything, to bring anything, to leave a legacy. Not about themselves, but leave a legacy that improves the condition, the human condition. And that's what I want to do. And the work I've done, I think, has that potential, not just in the medical stuff I was just speaking of. I'm talking the parapsychology. We're seeing things, we're experiencing things that clearly indicate that there's a reality out there far greater than we understand. And if we learn what this is, it will dramatically improve our lives in ways we can't begin to imagine, in technology, in health, in medicine, in learning, in everything. But there are people that don't want change. They just, let's stay the way it is. God forbid, don't change. Oh, no, that's bad.
It sounds like my old landlady, and actually the reason why we moved out of her house is one time she said to me, "I don't like change."
Amazing. Yeah, I
was like baffled. I was like, well, hold on a second. Are you saying that the only thing that's constant around everybody at all times is something that you don't like? You're shit right. Out of luck. You know, you're not going to have a very happy life if you don't like change.
Yeah, I mean, people are, you know, they're just living their lives on a day-to-day basis, and that's them. So what can you do? It's a very awkward situation. Very awkward. And I don't feel lonely. A little detached. It just, you know, I've met a lot of women online the last several years. And, you know, a lot of them, the scary part is a lot of them have been alcoholics, which, you know, I don't drink. I've never drunk. I don't drink. So, you know, when I was younger, when my health was better, once in a while I have a mixed drink or something. Alcohol's never really appealed to me that much. Or they're just crazy, where I was on a date about 4 years ago, this beautiful brunette, and she said her name was Susan. I'm looking at her, and I said, no, your name's not Susan, it's Nancy, right? And you don't live in Beverly Hills, you live in San Pedro. You're an alcoholic. And she turned white and then red. How'd you know? I said, well, that's what I'm looking, and that's what I'm feeling. You know, it's this girl I met, oh, God, 30 years ago through one of my friends. It's on my website. I was set up on a blind date. The girl was named Jody. She looked like Jane Badler, who played one of the head aliens in the original V-series. So we're on a date, and she said to me, well, your friend said you're psychic. What can you do? I said, well, I can diagnose you. She said, oh, really? What's wrong? And I said, you don't want to know. Said, okay. So I'm doing my thing, you know, relaxed. And I said, well, you've got a couple problems. One is you have upper GI problems. Second is you have a follicular cyst in your left ovary. And three, you have endometriosis. And she goes, well, what, huh? I said, look, I'm telling you, I see it. And so she went to her OBGYN. Yeah, he found everything. And he wanted to know how I could see it. And I said, I can't tell you. I just do it. Don't make it. How do you breathe? You just do it. Anyway, she started getting more having problems. Our relationship ended not because of the diagnosis, but she became anorexic and bulimic, and that was the end of that. She had problems. But, you know, it seems that the older I get, the less I have in common with more people, which is a little odd. You know, I go to parties, you know, the holidays come up, and I feel like, what am I doing? Like, you know, and as I talked about in the last blog about, you know, being a medical intuitive, people initially, oh, it's fun, it's interesting, then they're scared to death of you. They think you're either nuts or you're not human. The woman who was here last July with my colleague, his new girlfriend, she said, look, if you didn't lie to Barry and tell him, if you didn't tell Barry the truth, and he really did what he can do, if he really did what he appeared to do, then he's not human, because humans can't do that. So my colleague said, well, I always thought he was a little weird, but I don't know if he's not human. So, you know, this is my life, and this is the path I followed, and I don't think I would have changed it for anything. But it would have been nice if the girl from 19 that was abducted, if that had not happened, and we had continued, because it was, I mean, it was like two people living, it was like one person living in two bodies. It was that much of a kinship. And I don't think I'll ever find it again. I have a greater chance of being hit with a meteorite in the next 2 seconds than I do of getting married before I die.
Wait for it.
Here comes the meteorite.
We're just not that lucky.
No, I realized that if I meet someone, I meet someone. Years ago, I put some ads and online, these dating sites and something like that. One, I didn't get one. I got crazy people responding. I'm going, it's like, huh? No, just nothing. So, and then years ago, back in the 90s, yeah, like 20-some-odd years ago, a friend put some ads in a high-end New Age magazine for me as a medical intuitive, see if I get any work out of it. I did not get one single call. Not one. That's scary. Like that guru, that New Age guru in Malibu. You say, oh, no, they don't want to know what's wrong with them or who's preying upon them or robbing. No. They just want to know whether they're going to meet the next boyfriend or girlfriend or make the next deal or movie. I could care less. That doesn't help them or the world. It's crap. Who gives a damn? So it's, you know, it's like, and then a girl came by a couple of years ago. I met her when I was teaching, and she was having medical problems. Don't tell me a thing. I did my thing. I said, well, you're getting old. You have menopause. She goes, what? I said, there's only thing wrong with you is you've hit menopause. You're starting to feel sick. And, turns out that, yeah. And I said, it's also stop eating candy and drinking wine. It's metabolizing sugar, and it's affecting your body, and it's keeping you up. And I said, you're fighting your body and you're fighting age. You know, if you fight it, your body's going to revolt. Try to work with it as opposed to against it. and she didn't like it. She, even though she was 49 or 50, no, 52, 49, she looked like she was 30. Yeah, but biologically, chronologically, you're still the age. So, you know, I'm sorry. It's then one woman, remember, this is like 20 years ago, 30, did a reading on. I said, there's nothing wrong with you. What did you call me here for? She's like, I've got this pain in my joint. I said, that's called arthritis. That's called age. You know, and I said, no, there's nothing really wrong with you. And but I'll tell you one thing. If I'm near people who are epileptic, I get dizzy and I pass out. When I was in junior high, there was a girl named Helene. And, you know, average-looking girl. And every time I was near her, even if I didn't know it, like she'd be coming up behind me, I'd get dizzy and I'd black out. Found out she was epileptic. In the mid-90s, I was working for a group of people, and I went up and shook this guy's hand, and oh, God, I felt nauseous, almost passed out, epileptic. On the Queen Mary lecturing there in 2006, I was leaving, shaking hands with one of the ladies that worked there. The room started to spin, and oh, God, yep, epileptic. One of the women who worked with Dr. Moss, she was a research assistant named Alice. I didn't know her, met her. Oh, my God, why did I say, oh, epileptic? It's that my body's telling me no. And the last girlfriend, real girlfriend I had, I met through a friend of a friend of a friend who's gorgeous, looked like a short Joan Severance, stunning. We were dating, and it was perfect. She lived about 30 miles away, big deal. So I went there, and I started feeling sick, and I said, look, it was Judy. Look, Judy, got a problem. You've got some upper respiratory problems, but the main problem is the early onset of menopause. You have a prolapsed mitral valve. She goes, what? What? I go, mitral. Yep, verified. She did not, confirmed it. I said, I can't be around you. I feel sick when I'm near you. Then I met a girl online last year. Looked like a young Joan Collins. Stunning. Just gorgeous. And I never met her. We talked, looking at her pictures online. And I said, this is going to sound really weird, but are you sick most of the time? She goes, yeah. You have, like, bladder cancer. How'd you know? Yeah, no, I can't be near you. Can't even be near you. Thank you. That's it. I'll go to a movie, sit next to a stranger, and this happened years ago. And I said, why does my right kidney suddenly hurt? And the guy to my right says, that's funny. I've been having problems with my right kidney. It's odd. You have the same thing. I moved. It went away. So you live and you learn. So, and the girl, and the best one was, in 1973, in the lab with this gorgeous girl named Carol, stunning, black hair, blue eyes, looked like a young, short Shirley MacLaine, but not crazy. We're dating, and one point we're talking, and I said, oh, Carol, you've got a tumor here in your left breast, it's benign. He goes, well, what tumor, what tumor, where's the tumor? How do you see it? I said, it's hard to explain. She didn't want to hear about it. She started a new job, they gave her a medical workup for insurance purposes. They found the tumor, did a biopsy, it was benign, and that was the end of the relationship. She said, I cannot hold a job in a normal world, come home and be with a person like you. I'll never know what you're going to say. I feel like a piece of glass around you. I said, well, I'm sorry. What can I do? And that was that. And, you know, and we got along great. But she said, I feel like normal people can do what you do. Well, maybe they can, maybe they can't. So it didn't work anyway. What could you do? That was 41 years ago. Wow. I bumped into her years later. I'm glad we didn't get together because she gained so much weight I didn't recognize her. But anyway, but listen, we're just closing in on the 2 hours here. I just noticed that I have to have an appointment.
Okay. Well, in that case, it's, I don't know. I'm normally used to doing 3 hours. I'm now, so it kind of feels like we're missing something.
I know. I have to get that. I wish I could do 3, but I have other things I have to do. I have a commitment for. So we can all do another thing some other time and go from there. Okay?
Perhaps you have an hour free later on tonight where we can.
I'll let you know.
All right.
Okay.
No problem.
Okay.
Thank you, Barry.
Right. Thank you. Bye. We'll be right back.